Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number Smart Beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number Smart Beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com. /awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hey guys, welcome back to We Met at Acme. We are here with my friend Jack. What's up, Jack?
What's up?
Oh, wait, I totally forgot to ask you, can I say your last name?
Yeah,
later. Okay, on. Jack Mulqueen, everyone.
Friends for the infamous. For almost half of our adult life, by my count.
It's true. I remember Jack as just a lady killer. Is that the word?
Yeah, you could say that. Back in the day, done a little bit of a full 180 since then. But
so, well, for people that don't know you the way that I do, where are you from and how old are you?
Yeah, so I grew up here in New York City. I'm pushing about 28 years of age now, last I checked, and I work in nightlife, hospitality, food and beverage, event production, a jack of all trades, one might
no
say.
No pun intended.
Yeah. I've definitely never said that one before, by the way.
And what's your current relationship status now?
Yeah, so as of about 3 years ago, I've been with my girlfriend, Daniela. We live together here in New York City. We've lived together for almost a year now.
Awesome. Where do you guys live?
On the Upper East Side. So.
Oh, wow. Just a stone's getting ready for a family.
Yeah, stone's throw away from where I grew up. But it's been nice living there because, you know, especially in my line of work, I spend so much time downtown. Downtown can be very hectic. Mm-hmm. You know, there's that see and be seen element to it.
Yeah.
Uptown is very sleepy. So I go out in my sweatpants. You know, sometimes I'm on high alert when I go to Citarella because all of the older yentas can be a little bit stressful there. But for the most part, it's very relaxing and mm-hmm. low key, which I like.
Totally. Hold on. There's definitely a burp coming.
Lay it out. You want me to perk you?
Like, yeah, okay. But it'll come back. Okay, so that's so what's really interesting about you is that you work in nightlife. And we've had, I guess I would say the closest guest to you, to what you do is Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always interesting to see how like dating plays a role in that. Since you started working in nightlife, how would you say it has affected your dating life? Has it made you want to be, you know, like at first, did you want to be more, you know, promiscuous? I wish there was a better word for that. We were just talking.
Yeah. So, you know, nightlife by nature attracts an element of people who want to participate in from a career standpoint. You know, there's a very low barrier for entry. And I think that a lot of people get into it for the wrong reason. And a lot of that might be this perceived glory or which let me tell you is very fickle and tenuous, and you're not going to get anything out of it. But, you know, additionally, there's all of the glitz and the glamour, per se, mm-hmm. that is deeply ingrained within the fabric of and the lore of this city's nightlife. And, you know, for me, at a very young age, participating in that, certainly, like, you know, there was an attraction to it. But, you know, as you get older, you start realizing that, you know, it's a very surface level attraction. And mm-hmm. you start, you know, the longer and the more time you spend in it, you begin discerning, you know, who are the really quality people, you know, who have their head in the right reason and have like a good mind for the business acumen that comes with it, and who are just the imposters. And you start, you know, aligning yourself with the right people, and mm-hmm. you know, hopefully good things come from that point.
Totally. Is it competitive in the industry? Like, are you friends with other people in nightlife, or are you kind of like fake friends? We had Danielle Bernstein on, and she was saying, you know, it's hard, like, to be so close with people in the same.
That's a very good question, and it's something that I think about a lot. I've had an opportunity to speak to a lot of my peers from other cities. My peers in Montreal, a guy by the name of Zach Maklovich, who owns a few businesses up there.
Like nightlife?
Yeah, he has.
I heard that nightlife in Montreal is like all like mafia.
So there is a mafia component to the supper clubs and whatnot. And, mm-hmm. and Zach is actually, you know, a young upstart from Montreal who has had to push back against that and has now opened four very successful businesses completely free of mafia control. And there's also a very long tenured deep house after hours nightclub there called Stereo, which is
Stereo, our Stereo.
Yeah, it's Remember that? From the Hamptons, good times. Stereo, completely different, but they actually were, when they first opened, they refused to pay the mafia and they started getting firebombed.
No.
Yeah, like actually, like out of Goodfellas, like people throwing Molotov cocktails that into their businesses, scary. And you know, they put their heads down and continued to operate, and they've been around for 10 years now, and it's an incredible edifice. It actually opens at 4 a.m. and they don't serve alcohol.
Oh, I've heard of places like that. In Berlin, there's one as well.
Yeah, and there are many in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And but anyway, so going back to your question, because I digressed a little bit, I think that competition innately, it's something that's hardwired into our characteristics as New Yorkers. You know, we get out of bed immediately and we're on edge. Maybe there's a homeless person screaming at you as soon as you walk out your door, right. Or you're on the subway and you're jostling to get onto the moving car. So I think that competition is something that's hardwired into our DNA, but mm-hmm. it pains me because I see a lot of my peers in other cities elevating each other because they have a mutual respect for one another. And here in New York, I don't really see that as much, unfortunately.
I smell a reality show.
I've been approached, but...
Have you?
Yeah, but...
What networks, if you don't mind?
I don't recall. It was some uh-huh. generic casting email, but...
That's incredible.
You know, being discreet is kind of turning into my MO a little bit, so...
It's necessary. Well, I can't wait to share that secret that you told me to the world.
Yes.
No, I'm just
yeah.
kidding.
Yeah, so future... So future podcast listeners, because you're listening to this in the future, most likely you might have even heard by now that that there's a new space on the horizon. New space alert, breaking news. And yeah, so I can tell you the name of it.
Can't.
Though. I can.
Oh, can.
Yeah.
Oh, let's fucking hear it.
Yeah. It's called Make Believe.
Oh, I love that.
And
let's go to Make Believe.
And the sig of it is that I feel like nowadays we have this social media persona that we all put forward. And everybody has this ideal image that
we portray. So it's like, well, come here and portray your fake image.
Yeah.
And is it going to be Instagram worthy? Like, will there be spots? You know what I'm saying?
So yeah, so every space now, it's become the MO, has like an Instagram thirst trap.
Right.
And
like a neon sign.
Yeah, but and we were kicking the tires on it, and we said neon signs are a little bit played out.
Fully.
We do have something that I personally am working on. So I guess with a couple of artists who are near and dear to me. So it's going to be a joint collaboration from a couple of artists, kind of overseen by myself. And I think that it will be very Instagram worthy. I can't share much details beyond that, but going back to the concept of make-believe, you know, in the modern sense of the word, you think about, you know, our internet personalities, but this, this concept of kind of putting on a hyperbolic caricature of yourself when you go out is nothing new, and it predates social media. I mean, you think about our parents when they used to go to places like Studio 54 and whatnot, and the way that they would dress up and be so glamorous. And then you even go back further to Roman times, and you think about, you know, the parties that Caligula and Nero used to throw that were almost hedonistic in nature. And we've been partaking in make-believe for a very long time. And, you know, there's a sense of escapism to I call them wet businesses, you know, bars, lounges.
Yeah.
You know, people use them as ways to, you know, you're basically paying a premium to forget about all of your worldly troubles and hopefully try to get laid. So that's always been the end goal, is to get everyone laid.
Speaking of getting laid, let's get back to dating for a second. So dating. So you have a girlfriend now. Can we say her name?
Yeah. Her name is Daniela.
Great. So sup, Daniela.
Sup, Daniela. You're my favorite.
Shout out. So is it hard when you and Daniela, you know, if she wants to have like a chill night in and you have to be at the club because something happens last minute and no one else can be there? I don't know if that's happened before.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
What's that like when you have a girlfriend?
So Daniela is my most loyal patron. Yeah, she's there quite a lot, which is amazing because the nights tend to go a lot quicker when she's on site.
That's
great. And, you know, it's been an adaptive process because our hours are so different. And, you know, she and I have always been looking at the macro. And it's important to look into the future and determine, you know, the 5-year, the 10-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that the plan was always for me to begin pivoting the career to a point where I wouldn't have to be out late at night anymore, because obviously that's not sustainable when you get older and you start thinking about having children. But she's been immensely supportive of my endeavors, and I mean, she's really A1. Like, I couldn't do it without her. So
that's awesome. And let's talk bigger picture a little bit. With like modern dating in general, where do you think that bars and clubs kind of come into play? Do you think that it's getting to be embarrassing if you meet at a club? Like, and it's almost better if you meet out? Like, where did you meet Daniela?
Yeah, so my girlfriend and I met at a club.
There you go.
We met at Provocateur.
Oh my God, and, out of all places. Yeah, isn't that like a very, very intense club?
Yeah, so she and I have a very similar taste in music, and we actually got kind of introduced by a mutual friend.
Wow, you just gave me an idea to have an app that just matches people based on their taste in music.
That's an amazing idea.
Should I even have said that?
I'll finance it right now.
No, please.
Yeah, let's do
it. Okay, but continue.
Music is a really important component to people's relationships, and it's often a deal breaker. Like, you know, when I was single, that's one of the first things I gravitated towards speaking to people about. And if they spoke to me in terms that I didn't quite understand, and, you know, I consider myself pretty, you know, I'm omniscient when it comes to types of music, but there are just types of music that I can't relate to. And that would be
just out of curiosity, so that we know or can relate, what was the type of music that you guys, or what is the type of music that you guys share in common?
Everything, but on that particular night, we bonded over minimal techno.
Okay, that's new.
So,
So millennial.
So we were there, and obviously Provocateur in the nightclub, they used to have some amazing world famous DJs come in and play. And, you know, we got to talking, and I started, you know, kind of quizzing her because I wanted to see if she was for real. And I asked her who her favorite was. She said it was Richie.
Just Richie?
Richie Houghton.
Okay.
I said, you're bullshitting me because he's my favorite. And she pulled up her Instagram cover photo, and it was... She had in her cover photo, she had a disposable tattoo from Richie's Ibiza party.
That's really cute.
And fast forward 2 years, and Richie's a personal friend now. So it's kind of come full circle.
And she got to meet him because of you?
Yeah. So we actually, we have a pretty funny story behind that. So Rich, he's a little bit older now, and he's starting to pivot. He's getting married in May, and now focusing on curating a line of sakes.
So he's socks?
Sake.
Oh, sake.
Yeah. So he's partnered with breweries in Japan.
That's amazing. It's my
Japan.
Favorite drink.
So, you know, we got to talking with him. I spoke to him at a gallery opening at Gagosian that Lily Mortimer actually brought me to.
Shout out, Lil.
What's up, Lil? And
matcha sake.
There you go. Are you sensing a connection?
Well, that just came to me. There should be matcha sake.
Yeah, the connection is that, you know, I'm turning into a meme. Goes to Japan once and is
right.
deeply inspired. And
but you were.
Yeah. But, you know, Rich has this amazing line of sakes. And one of the things that I've kind of taken the initiative upon myself to do is recondition our friends and the way that they consume this amazing spirit.
So
to drink it in a more social setting instead of something that you traditionally would just pair with Japanese food. And, you know, we're not getting any younger,
right.
You and I. And I'm sure
thanks for reminding me.
And I'm sure that I'm not the only one who's noticing that now when I'm imbibing spirits in copious amounts, it really hurts me the day after.
My hangovers are honestly, I turn
it's
into
brutal.
Like a serious grandma in a home. I was so hungover once, I was shaking. Like, has that ever happened to you? Your whole body's just shaking.
Big time. And you try to go and sweat it out the next day, and it's just not working.
No.
So sake has like a really clean buzz and no come down. And so it's actually become my favorite spirit to drink. And now we carry it at all of our bars.
I love that. Mm-hmm. Well, I will definitely be ordering that.
Get your date a sake. This is a little word of advice to your listeners. Not only will she think that you're very cultured and elegant, but she will appreciate it for you the next morning.
Yep, you both will. And then you can have morning sex without the hangover.
Boom, there you go.
Let's talk about dating apps for a second. Were you on any when you were single?
Yeah, I was.
Which ones?
I was on Raya. Mm. I mean, I've had a little bit of a stint on all of them, to be honest.
Okay.
And, you know, again, we were kind of talking about this before we began recording, but... what I noticed was that it's a very surface level attraction and I feel like they condition you to making a judgment about a person based on their appearance.
100%.
And maybe that is, you know, an important quality that people look for. I mean, if you want to make sure that you're aesthetically compatible, but it really breaks my heart to think about how many relationships have been swiped left on before they even began just based simply on the person's appearance and how they presented themselves.
I swiped left on one guy so many times, like on every app that I ever saw him on, and then someone set us up like IRL.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, fine, like fuck it.
I've definitely seen a couple of repeat offenders.
Mm-hmm.
And I also remember I used to see someone who would accept me on one and then reject me on the other.
Right, that was basically me, but
I'm like, hey, what
rejected them all. Yeah, and then I ended up going out with him, and he was, like, so cute. And I was like, why was I, like, so obsessive over one picture? Why didn't I, like, give it a chance to see if he was cute in person, you know?
Must have been a pretty bad picture then.
It wasn't a good picture, and I really wanted to tell him that when we were dating. But there was no way to do it without, like, breaking his heart, essentially.
Right. Well, he did the right thing, letting him off easy there.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Okay. So did you have any like dating app dates that you went on that were like really bad? Any like catfish situations, or did it more or less go well?
Yeah. I mean, I had a couple of catfish situations. I had, you know, I think that the dating app life cycle just lends itself to that of short and casual. And especially in a big city like New York. You know, the funny thing about living in New York is that you, like, we're also in such close proximity to one another, but we're also much busier that it makes it harder to see people, even though we're, you know, we're living within 5 square miles of one another.
Right.
And what I noticed with dating was that, I don't know. I mean, these things just kind of fizzled out, and there was I never noticed any staying power. I know people who have found their significant other through dating apps, and God bless them, and I'm so happy for them. I mean,
me too.
I agree that it's a great way to kind of test the waters, and I also think that there's kind of like a cathartic release to, you know, imagining what could be with these people when you're swiping through them. You know,
you
start to envision all the potential range of outcomes that could happen with them. It's just like mental aerobics that we subconsciously do when we're participating in that.
Right.
But yeah, those were my experiences.
So you and your girlfriend have now been dating for 3 years. Do you have the same religion, and what religion is that, if so?
Yeah, so we have different religions. I'm Catholic and she is Jewish. And I've had an amazing opportunity to, go and visit her family during the Jewish holidays and partake in those traditions. The traditions are very
important. How religious are they?
I would say, moderately religious, but very devout during the holidays and, definitely going to temple for all the big ones. I've been to temple now, which is pretty cool.
So out of you and her, who's more religious?
I would say that she has a closer connection to her faith because of her family.
Have you talked about how you want to raise your kids?
Yeah, we're going to raise our kids Jewish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Would you convert?
No.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was confirmed. That's the thing about monotheism is that, at the end of the day, we all cherish the same God and, despite having different beliefs, I think that that's the one thing that connects all of us together. So
That's beautiful. And now that you are monogamous with someone and very happy and in love, how do you kind of cut ties with the girls from, let's say, your rotation or the past or exes, and do you at all?
Yeah, so that was pretty instantaneous. As soon as we started getting serious, I'm of the ilk that cheating and being cheated on is a rite of passage in this life. It's something that everyone must endure in either on one side or the other.
Wow.
But as they go
through. What about both?
In order,
like, are you saying
in
both
order
or
to,
just one?
If you've been on both sides like I have, it will certainly broaden your perspective and thoughts on the matter. But when Danielle and I got together, there was a determination that I would pass along to any guy who wants to have a successful relationship, which is that you can't give, you cannot give any quarter. And what I mean by that is texting another girl suggestively is cheating. Speaking to another girl suggestively is cheating. Allowing a girl to engage you in suggestive conversation is cheating. And if you just nip it in the bud every time, then you will not even afford yourself the possibility to go down that path. But as soon as I see guys start, dipping their toe in the water, Mm-hmm. It's a very slippery slope, and yeah. nothing good will come from it. And yes, but I want to add something more while we're on that topic. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, an interesting thing that you talked about with another guest was how, you know, you begin introducing your girlfriend as she interacts with, like, your social media presence. Mm. And that's something really fascinating because it's a kind of a modern phenomenon. It's like, how do you... It's like the grand debut, you know?
100%.
And a lot of times, you know, most of the side pieces will kind of get the hint when you do that. So
if they don't, I feel like it's crazy, right?
It's not a conversation that needs to be had in most cases, but, you know, what I would advise is just always take the high road, mm-hmm. you know? Always take the high road, and if they're nice people, then they'll understand.
Yeah, I agree. And also, like, it's, I mean, I agree, but at the same time, it's like, you don't know in the beginning of a relationship if it's going to necessarily be the end-all, be-all. Hmm. So I think there's a part of you that, like, wants to kind of keep...
Test the waters.
Not just test the waters, but keep, like, things open.
Mm, and, keep a and contingency
be
plan.
Be honest, but keep things open. And yeah. say, like, I'm seeing someone, I'm trying to, you know, put everything into this right now. Like, we'll see how it goes. Mm. And then, like, they usually say something like, okay, well, if it doesn't work, like, I'm here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to do because at that point, you've been very forthcoming and it's really at their discretion whether they want to sit around or explore other options as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a courtesy. I have a friend who was in a relationship and there was a girl who really liked him. And I think she, like, tried to flirt with him and he was like, you know, listen, I'm in a relationship. And she was like, okay, well, call me when you guys break up.
Yeah.
And yeah.
People can be very spiteful and vindictive.
Yeah,
who
no,
knew,
no,
right?
no. But he called her when they broke up. And then they started dating. Well, like, and it wasn't like the reason they broke up necessarily, but it happened like naturally. And then he called her. And,
well, you know, there's that old idiom that says the best way to get over someone is to get under someone.
Well, that's very true. And I do believe that. But I guess what this person did worked in a way. You know?
Yeah, there
she
you
wasn't,
go.
She wasn't saying... Excuse me. She wasn't saying, I want to, you know, fuck you. I don't care if you have a girlfriend. She was saying, okay, well, call me when you break up.
Mm-hmm. Respect.
Yeah. I should do a poll question on that.
Yeah.
What are some of the keys to sustaining a successful relationship for you're at the 3-year mark? Obviously, it's not every relationship, although even though it could be amazing, it's still work at the end of the day. And you have to do things all the time to ensure that it goes well, like anything. So what are some things that you do, like 3 things?
So, well, everyone says the key is trust. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty obvious. I mean, that's like saying the key to winning a football game is scoring the most points. Like, yeah. You have to have trust.
Right.
So that's just a de facto number one, and we can move on. The next most important thing, though, that I've learned is... And this is one of the hardest things also, especially if you're an only child like I am. Are you an only child? No, you have a sister.
No, right? I have a sister, yeah, but so, I forgot you were an only child.
So
is she an only child?
She has 2 brothers.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but they're much older than she is. Mm-hmm. So the key is broadening your perspective to encompass that of the other person. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is... Most likely when you've found somebody who you really care for and can see yourself spending the rest of your life with, what, you know, it's about striking a balance between each other's interests and needs. And a lot of time you're going to find that your interests are aligned.
Right.
And that's the most amazing thing because when it comes to eating good food or going to a concert that both of you partake in or traveling to a far off land, who doesn't like sitting by the beach and getting drunk? You know, I mean, these are all things that we don't have to split hairs over. But
right.
When it comes down to things that one person wants to do more than the other, then there has to be a compromise because... And case in point, for example, I'm a huge gamer.
Mm. Video games?
I'm a big gamer. It's how I keep in touch with a lot of my friends who don't live here in New York.
What games?
right now it's Player Unknown Battlegrounds, which is kind of like the Hunger Games on an island, but it really oscillates. And what I would say is, like, for example, if I've been playing for an hour and my girlfriend has been intently watching, maybe I don't need to play another game. Or my girlfriend, you know, has a gaggle of gay friends who come over to watch Housewives every Tuesday and drink wine. And it's like, okay, maybe we can stop after the third episode of Housewives because we haven't spoken to Jack in 3 hours. So little things like that, that, I mean, and obviously that's like a microcosm of the relationship, but on a much larger scale, finding a middle ground and aligning your interests as much as possible will lead to a very fruitful relationship.
Agreed.
And another little tidbit that I would advise is be a good listener.
Mm.
Yeah. Be a good listener is super important. And
Speaking of listening, I'm shocked that I've never talked about this on here before. But being a good listener is not just listening. There's so many different types of listening. And I learned this recently. I was at a WeWork and Goldman Sachs event, and they were teaching you all these random things. And there was a woman who was like a specialist in listening. And she said that there's three types of listening. The first type is defensive listening, where you're listening when you already know what you're going to say, which is really not good listening. And it happens a lot on podcasts when people have guests. They already know the next question, so they're not really listening to the guest's answer. I'm guilty of it too. And then the second listening is listening to solve the problem, which is what a lot of men do in relationships, truthfully. This is what she said, so don't blame me, guys. But a lot of men will, like, for example, let's say we're dating and I'm at dinner and I'm like, Jack, like, today was so bad. Like, my boss was such an asshole to me. Like, I just fucking hate work. And you, as, you know, a guy would say, I think you should talk to your boss, and you should be like, it's not okay that you were mean to me. And I'm like, no, like, that's not the point. I just want you to commiserate with me for 1 second and be like, that does suck. Your boss is a fucking asshole. You're right, you know? But a lot of guys, like, want to be the hero and be like, well, this is what you should do. Do you ever see yourself doing that in your relationship?
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All the time.
Yeah, and is she ever like, can you just fucking agree with me for 1 second?
All the time also.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned, the listening thing is kind of a work in progress.
Yeah.
So, but I think I am improving every day, and I am definitely guilty of that type of listening, as you mentioned, but...
Well, then there's the third type, which is just like truly listening with no agenda whatsoever, which leads you to sometimes be able to commiserate with that person.
A lot of times the second type of listening that you mentioned is a means of cajoling them into, you know, uplifting their spirits and providing them a temporary modicum of solace, you know, while they're getting through this problem, which I think is kind of like an instinctual reaction on the guy's behalf to want to, you know, cajole their partner.
Right. But... and that's really sweet. And maybe there are some women out there that do that as well. And I commend you in some ways. But I think at the end of the day, like, at least in my own, like, world and like, experience, I just sometimes want to feel the feelings when they come up and just, like, let myself be upset or let myself be mad and then move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that doesn't mean like acting out necessarily, like sending a rude email to my boss. Like, I wouldn't want my partner to like then draft an email with me that's gonna like ruin the day. But
I think that one of the most special things about when you find a very special partner is you know, that you found someone to go on this journey with together. And life is very fickle and capricious, and some days are great, some days are not so great, but you empathize with your partner, and when they're not having a nice time, it's about bringing yourself down to their level so that you can really feel what they're feeling and try to help them get through it.
Agreed. Let's go back to being an only child for a second. When you were dating and you would tell women that you were an only child, was there any kind of reaction?
Not particularly. Not that I remember. I think that the innate, suspicion is that somebody who's an only child tends to be selfish, tends to not share with others. But, you know, certainly when I was dating, what I found was that I gravitated towards one of the most frustrating parts was having to constantly repeat certain life experiences that you felt were important to flesh out your character. And a lot of times those stories, which are so significant to us and define who we are, they lose that significance when you're constantly iterating that to a new person, because it's just part of your kind of canned soup introduction that you go through when you first meet somebody and they start asking about you. And so I think that that's one of the things I don't miss about dating, is having to repeat stories, repeat telling new people that I lost my father at a young age, repeat telling new people, oh, isn't that funny? I'm from New York City. Nobody's from here. Weird things like that, you know, they just lose the significance when you're constantly having to repeat them, but they are indelible parts of who we are as people.
Yeah. Not to get deep pretty fast, but I feel like you can handle it. You mentioned you lost your father, and I've seen the pictures of him, and he's such a handsome man.
Very dapper.
He definitely is. Do you think that when you were dating, before you found the one, you were looking for, like, it was important to you to have a connection with the girl's father, or that was not even relevant whatsoever, and or did that play in any way?
I never had a significant enough girlfriend between when I lost him when I was 21 and now that I would really try to assimilate to their father and take them on as a father figure. I definitely have that with Daniela's father, which is, you know, more than I can ever ask for. He's an incredible man. However, the one thing that I noticed, because my father was sick for a very long time, when I was dating when he was sick, it really only lent itself to my selfishness. And that was a byproduct of my youth and where I was at the time in my life. But I never really gave the girl a fair shake because I was so consumed with this problem. And how could they relate? You know, that was my rationale. And so it was almost like a spiteful and vindictive way, despite the fact that that I was using them as a bastion of strength throughout this difficult time. I was all take and no give. And I think that contributed itself to why all of those relationships kind of flamed out.
Yeah. You were selfish without trying to be or realizing you were being.
Well, and I actually deceived myself into thinking that it was my prerogative since I was dealing with this immense trauma.
Right. Yeah, I think, I have to cut this out, but I think the guy that I was seeing before the guy I'm seeing now was doing that because he just lost his dad.
Yeah. No, it's a terrible thing, and it's part of the journey, you know? Like, we're all going to lose our parents someday, but...
Ugh, yeah, knocking on wood right now. I can't even think.
But, when you do, it really changes who you are as a person because it's such a... it's crazy. It's a really crazy feeling.
I can only imagine. And it makes me have a lot more respect for my parents.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Talk to your parents all the time. Answer their phone calls.
I feel that. And I always do. And I always, like, use an excuse to do it. I'm like, well, you never know. Like, they could be calling about something serious.
Yeah.
But I really just want to talk to them.
Make time for your parents. Great word of advice. And you're never too cool to hang out with them either.
I'm with you. Unless they're, like, you know, really terrible. Which happens sometimes.
Yeah.
If your parents are bad people...
Then don't hang out with them.
Don't hang out with them. And I'm sorry. I'll be your mom. Let's talk about women being women and in 2018. And someone had reached out to me on the DM and kind of asked me if I could talk about how it's like we can call men out and we shouldn't be afraid to, whether it's you know, them being distant to us or playing mind games with us. And I think a lot of women are afraid to because they don't want to scare a man away. What's your thought on that? You don't have to call your girlfriend out, but like, does she give you shit?
I think that men gravitate towards women who assert themselves and have very strong characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a woman who is vocal about her wants and needs, that's something that's very attractive. I think that it's human nature that as soon as you give somebody an inch, they're going to take a mile. And so if you present yourself as a pushover, then most likely you're going to have a guy walk all over you.
Yep.
However, I think that, you know, perceiving the other person as an equal is, and that's more a problem for guys than girls. I see a lot of my single guy friends, they objectify women, you know, and oftentimes the woman is a means to some sort of gratification,
mm-hmm.
be it sexual or emotional. But as soon as you start seeing that person as your peer,
yeah.
then you're that much closer to, you know, to being able to establish a meaningful relationship.
I'm with you. And the friends that you mentioned, how can a girl who's single and dating tell when they're dating someone who is someone that objectifies women? Because they don't obviously do it necessarily in front of the woman.
I think that one of the easiest ways to discern that is by evaluating the company that they keep. Mm. There's that old saying, show me your company and I'll tell you who you are.
Right.
And I think that if the guy is a part of a wolf pack, per mm-hmm. se, or something of that sort, that should be a tremendous red flag. You know, in this day and age, people divulge so much of their personality that, you know, checking their friends' stories might give you a good inclination in terms of what their social and recreational activities entail.
Yeah, checking the person you're hooking up with stories is the new, like, texting people to see what they're doing.
I'm going to take it a step further and say check their friends' stories.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It's the new texting, like, a friend who's, like, at the same bar.
Exactly.
And saying, like, tell me what, like, Jack's doing. I'll just check the story instead of the friend.
Yeah, it's very surreptitious. You don't even have to ask.
Yeah, and you don't even have to check it with your own Instagram. You can make a fake one. How about that?
Mind blown.
Jinx.
Jinx, buy me a matcha.
From a guy's perspective, what are some, like, deal breakers, turnoffs for you? Just like, no, it's not happening because she did this.
Well, I think that, you know, being assertive and being pushy during the nascent stages of a relationship are, yeah, it's a very fine line that the woman has to walk. And oftentimes, you know, if I feel like things were moving too fast, you know, I would just put the kibosh on it right there.
Same with a guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. And I think that, you know, the feeling out process, unfortunately, at times, like, it's such a silly rigmarole that you have to go through. And I don't miss that at all. But
yeah.
I see friends like, should I text him? When should I text him? It's like, if you're thinking about it too much, you're just going to psych yourself out.
Right.
Just be yourself.
Mm.
And if they like who you are, then that means they're a keeper. And if they don't like who you are, then...
Yeah.
But you shouldn't have to, like, start compromising your personality to make them happy.
I'm with you. Like, I'd rather be crazy to them and myself than to be this, like, person who's being cautious.
Yeah. Because you're going to notice that it's impossible to keep that up forever, and
totally.
You're just going to wind up feeling unhappy and unfulfilled. And the more you start letting, like, as that comfort level increases and you start really divulging your true personality and letting your inner freak fly, if they're turned away by that, you know,
they're not the one.
Yeah.
It's funny. I actually just did something that, like, showed my crazy a little with the guy that I'm seeing. We had a conversation on the phone, but I was just, like, not in a good mood. And it wasn't, like, a great conversation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So after the conversation, I was like, thinking about how I wish it had gone better. And I could have just, like, left it, but I'm me, and so I FaceTimed him and, like, had to see his face. And I was like, I feel like that conversation could have gone better. And he was like, wow, this is so unnecessary, but, like, fine.
I think girls might be big on, you know, rectifying conversations that leave a bad taste in their mouth.
Is that a girl's thing, not just a me thing?
Yeah, but then again, nobody likes being spiteful and petty forever. And whenever my girlfriend and I do have a little tiff, and we immediately like remove ourselves from the situation a little bit, like, wait a minute, we were just arguing about something very silly and futile,
right?
So, goes a long way. Conversation critical.
Yeah,
have them.
So let's talk about date spot recommendations. Obviously, you're still dating because that's what you do in a relationship. You still need to go on dates.
Yeah.
What are some date spots that you like? Tell us.
So there's that disco song that I love. It's called "Keep the Fire Burning" by Gwen McRae.
Yep. If you're not dating, you're not dating.
And yeah, even if you've been together for however many years, you have to keep the fire burning. Mm. You know, you have to keep it burning hot. And oh, let's see. Alaska, yeah, yeah, I don't know. We're playing HQ trivia.
It's so distracting. Yeah, you got to keep the fire
burning. So establishing routines and little traditions. Danielle and I go to JG Mellon at 11:30 a.m. Every Sunday. And
it's like my bacon, egg, and cheese every morning.
And I just want to go on record, by the way, and say that JG Mellon downtown is not the real JG Mellon. It's an imposter.
Mm.
It's basically a wolf in sheep's clothing. It doesn't count. So stop posting pictures from JG Mellon downtown. It's not the real thing.
And Liz Mandel would agree. Shout out, Mandel.
And there's something magic. Oh, you could say, oh, yeah, but they change the grill every 4 years. No. There's something magical about the grill uptown on 74th Street that you're never going to be able to capture that essence.
And you will never be able to get it out of your fingers for like a week after. Yeah. But it's an amazing
Which
smell.
Which is fine because my girlfriend likes just smelling my fingers from time to time. So there you go. Like, smell my fingers.
Yeah, that's a great date spot. Wait, what other than JG's?
Yeah, so, okay, I'm going to let you in on a little insider secret. Ooh. So many amazing restaurants downtown. A lot of times you want to go for a cocktail afterwards, somewhere very discreet, you know, where you're not going to see anybody.
You're starting this like Stefan from SNL. You know?
But there's a space over on McDougal Street. It's called the Up and Up.
Oh.
Yeah. And amazing cocktails, very low key. They play a lot of like fun 70s and 80s music. It's underground. It's seated only cocktail bar with a 3-page cocktail menu. Really good drinks.
Wow.
You're not going to see anybody you know. Definitely go check.
How did you find out about it?
Eater, Twitter. Eater, Twitter is I check the Eater heat map from time to time to see things that pop up. Try to go check out the new spots.
I love
spots.
That. So guys, if you're listening, take your girl to the Up and Up. It's different than Little Branch. She'll be impressed.
There's also a new one that I heard is pretty fun, but I think it's more of a party spot. It's called Ghost Donkey.
Oh, yeah. I love Ghost Donkey. Yeah, I went on a date there.
There you go.
Speaking of food and places to go, something we both share is a love of food and cooking and just all things food. Is there another name for food? Like,
culinary.
Is there another synonym
cuisine.
For food? Cuisine. We love cuisine.
Yeah. And we're definitely not lean cuisine.
But what are some of your favorite things to cook? Do you cook for your girlfriend? Does she cook for you? And do you think that men should cook more?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Who doesn't like a man who can cook?
Right?
My girlfriend's an amazing cook. She's Moroccan.
Oh, wow.
So the tagine, shakshuka, salad kuit, which is like a grilled red pepper sauce that you put on baguette.
Wow. Yum.
My specialties, you know, the chef Mulk really tends to have like a rotation. Now my rotation is that of dishes.
Right, love it.
And okay, so I have a really good Chilean sea bass with capers, San Marzano tomatoes, peppers. I have an amazing, okay, this is super easy and I can explain it to you right on the pod. Okay, cook bacon. Mm-hmm. Take the bacon, transfer it, keep the bacon grease in the pan. Put Brussels sprouts, cut side down, fry them until the bottom.
With the bacon grease?
Yeah, with the bacon grease. Oh, wow. Fry them until they are crispy and brown on the bottom.
I'm going to do this.
Toss in some slivered almonds, put the bacon back in the pan with the Brussels sprouts, kind of mix it all together, sriracha, lime, boom, done. Delicious. Wow. Brussels sprouts. It's that easy.
Sounds incredible.
I just explained that to you in 20 seconds, and you can make it in 10 minutes.
Can I tell you my Brussels sprouts recipe? So I do Brussels also on like a medium to low simmer. Mm-hmm. And I make sure they're crispy, and then I put a little bit of maple syrup in. Mm-hmm. And then a little bit of honey mustard. Wow. And yeah, it maple. Literally tastes like candy instead of Brussels sprouts. And for all you guys out there who also hate Brussels sprouts and anything green, that's your recipe. And your mom will thank me if you're a young person.
Eat your veggies.
Eat your veggies.
Cook as much as possible at home. You don't know how much salt everybody puts in their food when you go to restaurants. So the more you get inclined to eat at home, your budget is going to thank you, and your health level will increase. This I can promise you.
Agreed. No. Do you have a dating quote? I know we've said like a couple quotes throughout, but like kind of like a mantra that you live by when it comes to dating or relationships or love.
Yes. I just need to think about it for a second.
Okay, take your time. I'll eat my apple.
Say no as little as possible.
I just had this conversation. It's like improv. Yes and.
Yeah. Say no as little as possible. And if you're inclined to say no, just really sit down and think about it. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about making compromises and fulfilling the needs of your.
And by the way, this is once you're in the relationship. Say no a lot when you're trying to get this guy.
Yeah. Say no until you have him, and then mm-hmm. stop saying no as much.
Yeah.
You know, my girlfriend would go a country mile to make me happy, and I'm the same way. And then also, like, this isn't necessarily a mantra, but this is like something that can be applied to any relationship. There are small things that. Shared experiences that you have, everybody has them with their partner along the way, and things that will carry a lot of significance. And always make sure that you, even if it's just like a small gesture to remind your girlfriend about how much you care about her, remind your partner about how much you love them.
Yeah.
It goes a really long way. Like, case in point, my girlfriend and I are both diehard Star Wars fans. We live and breathe in the Star Wars space. And, every now and then, like, you know, I'll stop by a comic book store and pick her up like a little Star Wars trinket. And it might be just something like so small, but, you know, just for her to come back from work and I've got her like a little gift.
That's so sweet.
It, like, she really cherishes it. So it might be something as minute as like a $19 Stormtrooper bobblehead, but just the gesture is something that really means a lot to them.
Stay. Like, you should always celebrate your partner in little ways.
Yeah. And
that doesn't mean necessarily spending money, but like doing little things that are cute.
Yeah, my girlfriend travels a lot for work, and the other day she was away for work, and when she came back from her flight, I brought flowers. She came home, I lit all the candles.
That's
I cooked
so nice.
Her a nice dinner. Oh, this was a really crazy one. So one night she had a huge party.
Mm-hmm.
It was a going away party at our apartment for one of her friends, and the week before she had made a comment to me that, you know, I should make a better effort about keeping the apartment clean and tidy, and
Oh, you cleaned up after her party.
The morning after, she was still asleep because she had been burning the midnight oil with her friends.
Mm.
And despite the fact that I wasn't even home when she was having this party, I woke up a little bit early and cleaned up all of her party. And we were actually sitting in bed, and she's saying, "Oh my God, I'm that's going to be so dreadful having to clean right now. I'm so hungover." And I had already cleaned the entire living room. So I was like, "Oh yeah, you know,
wow.
But at least you had fun." And then when she went outside, she started crying.
No,
yeah.
Honestly, like, I would have like proposed to you. That is amazing.
Yeah. So it's
every
just like
guy
the little
like
gestures like that that
100%.
Count, you know? And that comes from, that's because I listened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Listening goes such a long way. Mm-hmm. Listen to listen. And speaking of listening, thank you for listening. And thanks, Jack, for being here.
Of course.
And you can follow Jack on Instagram.
Incredible Mulk.
At Incredible Mulk. Mm-hmm. M-U-L-C.
M-U-L-Q.
M-U-L-Q.
Yeah.
Right.
And follow the journey. We will most likely be announcing
yes.
our new space very soon.
Check it out.
And we also have this I can announce right now. A weekly Thursday evening party on the rooftop of Output over the summer.
Wow.
Yeah, starting in May and going until September, every Thursday from 5 to 10.
Love that.
Have you been there?
To Output?
To the roof.
No, I haven't. Oh, I'm like a Brooklyn virgin, basically.
One of the most beautiful rooftops, mm-hmm. just complete like scenic view of the city, amazing
Love
music.
That.
So it's going to be
Can't
a good time.
Can't wait. Yep. Awesome. And follow We Met at Acme on Instagram.
Oh, I had some questions for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Mm. Stop the presses.
Let's see what he has to say.
So,
I'm scared.
So I actually, this is, we did not plan this. This is coming as a complete surprise to Lindsay right now.
Complete
I kind of
surprise.
Wanted to
I, like,
flip
to
the script on her a little bit because, it's important to keep her on her toes, you know.
I guess
that's
so.
Another good trick if you're just starting the dating process. Keep them on their toes. Okay, so
Always.
Here we go. Rapid fire questions for Lindsay, We Met at Acme.
Ah.
Round one. This pertains to your Instagram, Don't Expect Salads.
Okay.
Yeah. And if you don't follow Don't Expect Salads,
then you better.
Do so now. There's amazing food pictures of food. It's actually one of the ways that I determine where I want to go eat next here in the city.
Makes me so happy.
Yeah. Insider secrets. So, have you ever had someone expect salads? And if they did, what was their reaction to your Instagram?
Meaning, have I posted a picture of a salad before?
Well, have you had someone go to your Instagram and say,
I was expecting salads,
and yes, were they disappointed?
But I don't know if they're fucking with me or not. Like, I've had people comment and be like, what? I was expecting a salad.
And have you had someone, have you ever thought about making like an offshoot, like a spinoff of that, like expect salads?
Someone did, and they DM'd me and they were like, hey, you inspired me. Like, I love salads. Like, will you support me? And I was like, sure. And I followed them, but like, it's like very mediocre, you know?
Okay.
Do better, expect salads.
All right. So that was like the very surface level question. Now we're going to get a little deeper.
Uh-oh.
Guys, are you ready for this? You and I are both native New Yorkers.
Yes.
Would you raise your children in New York City?
So I'm actually pretty happy that you asked me this, and this is not too intrusive at all. I really want to raise my kids here. I think I turned out okay. And I think that it has a lot to do with my parents, not with where I grew up. And you know, myself a little bit too. I think that I got... Like, yes, we grew up faster than anyone else, but we got it out of our system. It's not like we were going to college and getting drunk for the first time and having our stomachs pumped, because we did that when we were 13. So it's like, for that reason, I like it. My cousin who has been growing up in New York, she's 17 and she's so wise beyond her years. And I think that's because she has such a great family around her to support her. And the last thing I would want to do would be to be away from my family. And I think that having that support system and like having so many people around to parent your kid is what makes your kid great, regardless of where you live. Having said that, New York is very expensive, and I wouldn't want the person that I end up with to feel pressure to like keep up with a lifestyle that I have if I live here. And then having said that, there's so many options now where you can make it not so expensive. Like, I would be willing to give up living in Manhattan. Like, I'm happy to live deep in Brooklyn or, like, in Queens. But I think being really close to the city and not living in, like, a five towns is really important to me.
What percentage of your friends now in your immediate circle are from New York City versus from elsewhere?
I would say it's half and half right now. I have my friends from BU and my friends from the city. They all kind of live here now, but I don't know who's going to end up staying and raising their kids. I think more likely just the people that are from here originally.
Would you surmise that the average amount of people that you know that grew up in New York City versus elsewhere, that per capita, that more of them that grew up in New York are completely fried by the time they're adults than people who grew up elsewhere?
Yes. I think you do have a point. I would say that the people that are from the city, more specifically that are from money, are less motivated and have something called affluenza in a way, where a lot of them don't feel like they need to work or do anything. And I think for those people, 100%, that's not good. But again, it's where you come from and your family. And if your parents say, don't worry about it, sweetie, from the beginning, you're not going to have motivation. But if your parents say, listen, we're rich and you're poor, it's a different story.
I think that you touched on a really interesting point, and that is that, people who grew up in New York City have so much exposure to everything that the world has to offer at such a young age that you become very precocious. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of positives that come from that, but mm-hmm. there are also a lot of negatives.
Yeah.
And what determines which side of the spectrum you will fall on, whether you will be an addict or, we've had we've had some very dear friends of ours who have lost their life to addiction. Mm-hmm. And we grew up thinking that was the norm.
Right.
And then, I went to Wisconsin and my friends from New York, right. That is just a complete anomaly.
They're more wholesome people.
Yeah. And so it begs the question, it's kind of like rolling the dice a little bit, like
it
gambling.
Is.
And,
it is.
And, do you want your, because I agree with you that, growing up in New York City, you are exposed to so much culture that it is giving you a great opportunity to develop a world view and a world perspective. But at the same time, you're very insulated.
Yeah.
So a lot of it comes down to parenting. And if you have absentee parents who are going to let your ill habits that are formed just from, being young and rushing yourself into young adulthood, then, that really determines how you're going to come out of it.
I think it's also the private school world versus the public school world a lot. Like my cousins now, I have two separate cousins that are in school in the city, in high school, in middle school, in lower school. And the ones in public school are still very wholesome. Mm. And the one in private school is a lot more, is a little too old for her age in a way. So I think that definitely has something to do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Now I have one last question.
Let's hear it.
So,
I'm scared.
Allow me as a listener of the podcast mm-hmm. to thank you for producing such amazing, fun, engaging content on a weekly basis.
Thank you.
It's not easy, guys, what she's doing. Spending her time interviewing, procuring interview subjects, much like myself, mm-hmm. editing the pod, publishing it. It takes a lot of work and effort, and to keep it engaging and interesting and pertinent to you, there's it takes a lot of ingenuity as well.
For sure.
And so from an interviewee's standpoint now, let me endorse We Met at Acme and say, subscribe, follow on all the social platforms, leave reviews. The reviews, it takes a second, but it really helps with the SEO for the pod. And that's like a really nice way of showing your gratitude for Lindsay for producing amazing weekly content like this. And I myself, you know, we've kind of talked about it as we were preparing for this. And I said, you know, I might want to throw my hat in the ring sometime soon at putting together a podcast. I was kind of thinking about the format of how I would want to do it. And I thought that it might be pretty cool, you know, since I'm musically inclined, to do some kind of hybrid of talk and interviewing with music. But we'll get to that later.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you, what has been the most challenging part about producing the podcast, and what has been the most gratifying part about producing the podcast?
I love that question. I'm going to start with the challenging so we can end on a good note. I would say the most challenging part of a podcast like this is, this might be a surprising answer, but finding someone that is truly okay with it. You would think that it makes like dating easier, but it makes it a little more, it puts a little more weight on the person I'm with that I'm so open like this. And, talking about such a, I guess, unfortunately taboo subject still. So that's a big part of it. I'm going to say another one just in case I want to end up taking that out. I would say the biggest challenge is, this is a hard one. Okay, give me a second. Oh, okay. The biggest challenge for me is not hurting anyone's feelings. And this isn't just about someone I'm dating or, you know, friends. This is anyone in general. When you talk and you don't filter yourself, people get hurt no matter what. People are really sensitive, and I've gotten a lot of not negative, not like criticism, but comments where people have been hurt by some things that were said. So as my dad says, you can't dance at every wedding. Mm. You know, you can't please everyone, but that's hard for me because I like to please everyone.
I guess what you're trying to say is keeping it 100 is no small feat.
Yeah, exactly. Keeping it 100, definitely is not going to make everyone happy all the time, but you got to bring the heat or just be yourself. And the best, most gratifying part is everyone's kind of like reaction to it. And a lot of women and men have reached out saying like, this podcast has really helped me, or this is a conversation starter for my boyfriend and I, or like we use your polls when, you know, we're bored at dinner. And like even something as little as that is really like makes me really happy. And I never thought that I would have a platform that was meaningful and not just like pictures of my boobs. And that is like so shocking to me that people actually like want to hear me speak. I thought forever, because I've never had a lot of Twitter followers, that people just wanted to see my boobs. And the fact that people don't know about my boobs, you know what I'm saying? It's the fact that people care about what we're talking about, and it's not something really dumb, and that's cool.
Well, being able to create content is no small feat, and I think you're doing an incredible job.
Thank you.
And I think that, you know, so much of our lives, especially here in the city, is spent in commute, in transit, and you don't always want to listen to music. I'm at a stage now, if I listen to music 100% of the time that I was listening to something, I was a passive listener.
New music.
Not only would there be no new music, but I would go a little bit crazy. So to be able to, you know, hear think pieces and interesting conversations that you're having with that pertain to, you know, growing up as a young urban professional here in the city, and how having, you know, relationships, how that integrates into our life is really important, and you're doing an awesome job.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
So proud of you. Can we hug right now?
Yeah, we're going to hug after this, but we'll hug now too.
We're hugging.
We're hugging. or maybe more. No, I'm just kidding. Love you, Daniela. Okay, thank you so much again. Thanks for flipping the switch on me. That was really fun and not and selfless, which is something that no guest, a quality no guest has shown yet. No, I'm just kidding. I love all you guys.
I do love talking about myself, though. Don't get it twisted.
Have a good night, day, afternoon, and write us a review and subscribe. Tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend. And, yeah, keep it 100.
Peace out.
Peace.